I don't know about you, but over my life, I can look back and there have been times when there have been what we might call light bulb moments, when the light has gone on and in different contexts, you've kind of said, wow, I've never seen that before. Maybe as a child, you were uncertain what you wanted to be or do. And there was some person in your sphere of influence, and you saw that person and you thought, that's what I want to be. Some teacher, maybe, or some nurse, or some car mechanic, and you said, that's what I'm going to do in the future. I really want to do that job. Or maybe if you're married, there was that moment when you realized that this was the one, and that you were going to marry them and be with them for the rest of your days. And that kind of light, sometimes it's a kind of it's not a light bulb moment, but the light just gets brighter and brighter and brighter, doesn't it? Other times it's a light bulb moment when the light just comes on. But for some of us, it's maybe more a slow coming on of the light. And tonight as we turn here to Matthew chapter 16, we have what I've called, you'll see on the screen behind me, Peter's light bulb moment regarding the identity of Jesus Christ. And there is that moment for those who truly become Christians when they realize that Jesus is who he says he is, and he is the Savior of the world, and I need to be saved. And that's something that Peter here is confessing tonight, who Jesus is and what Jesus' relationship is to God. And yet, having gone through this light bulb moment, and we're going to pick through it in a moment or two, there is that sense very soon afterwards, Peter falls. And Jesus says to him in verse 23, "Get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the things of God, but the things of men." We do, as believers, have our light bulb moments, but we also, is it not the case, also have our lights out moments. Lights on, and then we fall, and those are lights off moments. And Peter here has a lights on moment, followed swiftly by a lights off moment. And that's just a reminder to us in Peter's life that as humans, as sinners, we can be really up there with the Lord, up there with the Lord, and then a few moments later we just crash and burn. And that's Peter here in this passage. But notice first of all what led to his light bulb moment, and it was Jesus' question in verse 13, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" So Jesus says to the disciples, "Who do people say the Son of Man is?" Son of Man was a title from the Old Testament that was in the book of Daniel, and Jesus often used it to refer to himself. It indicates his humanity. So he says to the disciples, who are people saying I am? And they reply in verse 14, "Well, some say you're John the Baptist back from the dead. Some say you're Elijah, the miracle man. And some say you are Jeremiah, great teacher, great prophet." And I suppose if you were to go up with a clipboard in the main street in Ballymoney or Coleraine or Belfast, and you were to ask people, who do you say Jesus Christ is? They'd probably come up with similar answers. He was a great man. He was a great teacher. He did miracles years and years ago. That's probably what most people would say. It's kind of generic answers. And so Jesus, having got the kind of generic answers, he then personalizes it in verse 15. "But what about you?" he said. "Who do you say?" as he addresses the disciples. "What about you? Who do you say I am?" Because it's not enough just to know what everybody else thinks. It's not enough to read books. It's not enough to watch videos. It's not enough to listen to me preaching. It's, what about you? Where are you with Jesus Christ tonight? Where am I with Jesus Christ tonight? That's the question, isn't it? What about you? Who do you say the Son of Man is? Because we can give all the pat answers, and some of us are really good at giving the pat answers. We know what the minister wants you to say in the communion class or in the Bible class. You know what the teacher is asking. You just come out with the pat answers. But what about you? What about me? How personal and up close are we with Jesus tonight? Who do you say that I am? And it's Peter, of course, who speaks up. Verse 16, we've said this before. Peter is the one who very often speaks up first. And he answers you, he says in verse 16, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. Now, to you and to me, with 2,000 years of church history behind us, we shrug our shoulders and say, yeah, so what? That's what Jesus is. It's Jesus Christ, isn't it? That's his name. So what's so remarkable about that? Well, notice where these words are being spoken in verse 13. When Jesus came to the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? Caesarea Philippi, it's named after Caesar. And Caesar at this stage was just coming strong with the teaching that he was the Son of God. And citizens were having to all bow down and say Caesar was God. So for Peter here to say to Jesus, you're the Son of the living God, this was putting him at odds with the state religion. And also for Peter to say that you're the Christ, there's been many, many, many Christs who had come over the centuries claiming to be Christ, leading revolts, leading political movements. For Peter to call Jesus Christ was inflammatory. That's why, just by the way, Jesus in verse 20 warned his disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Christ, because if word had got out that he actually was the Christ, the people would have been flocking to him with their swords and spears ready for a fight. And that's not the type of kingdom that Jesus had come to bring, a physical kingdom that you fight with guns and knives and swords for. But when Peter says, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God, Peter was confessing that he had seen some light bulb moment had come in his life, and he had seen that Jesus was the Son of the living God. Not just a great teacher, not just a miracle worker. And he's been with Jesus now for chapter after chapter after chapter in Matthew's gospel. But this is the Son of God. That's quite a claim, isn't it? The Son of God. The Nicene Creed puts it like this. God, we sing it at Christmas, God of God, light of light, very God of very God, begotten, not made, of one substance with the Father, by whom all things were made. Peter says to Jesus, that's you. You are the Son of the living God. And that's the light bulb moment, that Jesus is God in the flesh, God on earth. That Jesus is the glory of God, the joy of God, the altogether lovely one, the rose of Sharon, the lily of the valley. There's a hymn that goes like this, O love of God, how rich and pure, how measureless and strong, it shall forevermore endure the saints' and angels' song. And that's what Peter has seen, that Jesus is the love of God come to earth to seek and to save the lost. And this is his light bulb moment as he confesses, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And I wonder tonight, just can you say that to Jesus? Is that your basic heart's confession? Because we can get so caught up in churches, in studies. We can get so caught up in ministers and who's in our church or who's in the church down the road or who's moving or our denomination as opposed to what's going on in the Church of Ireland or what's going on in the Baptists or whatever it may be. And we miss the point. You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. That to know Jesus is our greatest blessing. And that's why in verse 17, Jesus replied to Peter, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by man, but by my Father in heaven. Peter, you didn't learn this in school or in the synagogue. This is not Peter like learning how to cross stitch or learning how to drive or learning a new language. You go and you go through the disciplines of learning. You didn't learn that way, Peter, the way people study and train themselves up in whatever they're doing. Peter, for you to be able to say you're the Christ, the Son of the living God, God has opened your eyes. You're blessed. We cheapen the word blessed when we say to people, blessings on you, or we sign off letters, blessings. We cheapen the word. Because the word means to know God at its deepest level. That's blessing. And real Christianity, and this is a reminder to us, real Christianity is not human-centered, but it's God-centered. It's not something you or I earn or merit. It's something God gives by the Holy Spirit. On my own, I have no light. I have no understanding. I have no hope. With men, this is impossible, but not with God. All things are possible with God. And if you haven't got Christianity, you got to look to God for it. You got to look to God for Jesus. And that's why Jesus said, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for this was not revealed to you by man, but by my Father in heaven." You've had your eyes opened by God. And what a privilege that is. I don't know about you, but I look back on friends that I've had over the years, or family members over the years, and they're not saved. They've never had their eyes open, and I wonder why me? Because there's people out there who are a lot better than me, and they haven't had their eyes opened. A lot more worthy than me, and they've haven't had their eyes opened. So why me? The only answer is God. Blessed are you, for this was not revealed to you by man, but by my Father in heaven. And we ought to be, if our eyes have been opened, so thankful that God has done this for us. We didn't deserve it. What a blessing. And that's why Jesus says in verse 18, "And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it." Notice Jesus didn't say, "I tell you that you're Peter, and on you I will build my church." But "you're Peter, and on this rock I will build my church." And you probably know this is one of the most contentious verses in the whole of the Bible. Not just the declaration that Jesus is the Son of the living God. That's contentious. But this is the contentious verse because the Roman Catholics take it to mean that Peter is the rock. And from that, they make Peter the first pope, and they build a whole church then on the pope. Whereas the Reformers, when they came to this verse, they said, well, if you build it on a man like Peter, you're building on a very shaky foundation, because only a few verses later, in verse 23, Jesus calls him Satan. He's a very flawed man to build a church on, if you're going to build it on a man. So it's not the man, but it's the confession of the man. That's what Jesus meant when he said, "You are Peter, and on this rock," on what you've just said, Peter, your words, "you're the Christ, the Son of the living God." That's what I'm going to build my church on. It's Christ who is the chief cornerstone, the foundation stone. And to me, that seems like the most satisfying and gladdening interpretation of the verse. And Glenn Owen, who was a one-time minister of Berry Street Presbyterian Church and wrote a book called From Simon to Peter, he said, and this is the quote, he said, "Peter is the first foundation member of the new church." He's the prototype believer, if you like. Because the church of Christ is truly those who truly know Christ. And when Peter makes this confession, he is showing that he truly knows Christ. And therefore, Jesus says, on this I will build my church. The people who truly know me, not the people who come through the doors, not the people who read the books and are able to say all the right answers, but the people who truly know me. Peter, remember, was just a fisherman from up north, an unknown fisherman. Yet into that man's life had come the grace of God. And it opened his eyes, had forgiven him his sins, and flooded his heart with the love of God. And Peter could sing that hymn, we sometimes sing it, I stand amazed in the presence of Jesus the Nazarene, and wonder how he could love me, a sinner condemned unclean. How marvelous, how wonderful, and my song shall ever be. It's the confession of Jesus, of what God has done in my heart, and then I speak it out. That's what Jesus is building the church on, the work of God in the heart that enables the heart to see Christ, to savor Christ. And that's your greatest blessing, that's my greatest blessing, worth more than all the tea in China and all the oil in Saudi Arabia and all the gold in Fort Knox. And lastly, just look at the future Jesus promises to Peter in verse 18. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. It's no coincidence that in the Acts of the Apostles, when Peter preaches in Acts chapter 2, he opens up the gospel, the grace of God, to the Jews. He unlocks the door, if you like, on Pentecost Sunday. And in Acts later on, he preaches the gospel to Cornelius, to the Gentiles. He opens the door of the gospel to the Gentiles. Because Jesus says, I'm giving you the keys to open this up to people. And on this rock, he says, I will build my church. It's not your church, Peter. It's not a denomination's church. It's not an earthly leader's church. It's my church. It's Christ's church. It's the bride of Christ. And he promises to build it. I wonder, do you know, just to give you an example of Christ building his church, a very unusual example in Korea. Do you know how the church started in Korea? Korea today has some of the largest Presbyterian churches in the world. A missionary called Robert Thomas went there from Wales in the mid-1800s. He didn't know much Korean language, but he had brought Korean Bibles. And he was going up a river and in a boat, and he was working on the boat, and what he did was, when he saw people on the banks of the river, he threw Korean Bibles across to them. That was his missionary work. He threw Bibles to people as he went up the river. The locals, when they got the Bibles, very poor folk, they ripped them up, and they used them as wallpaper for their huts and their houses. A couple of decades later, in the early 1900s, people came from all over that particular district to read the words that were plastered to the walls of the buildings. And as they read the words plastered on the walls of the buildings, they became believers. And that particular part of Korea today has a very strong Christian presence with hundreds of churches. Jesus said, I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And that's a very clear example of Jesus building his church in the country of Korea. But he also said yes, I will build my church, but the gates of hell or Hades will not overcome it. The bad news is you're going to face opposition. I'll build my church, but there's going to be opposition, so be prepared for the gates of hell coming against you. I quoted the other week my former French teacher who went to the Ivory Coast as a Wycliffe Bible translator. And I've been reading through that book. And he tells about the day they came to translate the part of Luke's gospel about the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. And he said, on that particular day, sitting on the veranda of the house was a spitting cobra. And the men had to kill the spitting cobra. Then he said, on that same day came a snake they called the one-minute serpent. It's called the one-minute serpent because if it bites you, you're dead in a minute. He said they never saw them, hardly ever saw these serpents, but on that day, there it was in the house. On that same day, his child took ill and had to be rushed to hospital. She'd never been ill before, and she had to be rushed to hospital. It was critically ill. Her life was spared. And he said, was it coincidence that that was the day he was translating the part of the Bible that dealt with the victory of Christ over death? And in that book he says it was no coincidence. Because the devil is real and the devil fights to stop his church, the church of Christ, growing. But Jesus says, I will build my church and the gates of hell will not overcome it. And remember Samson carrying the gates of Gaza up the hill? He ripped them off and he carried them away. And Jesus Christ is the one who rips off the gates of hell and carries them away. Whatever the devil throws at us, whatever opposition, difficulties there may be, Jesus is stronger, greater, mightier, more powerful. And he will defend you, he will defend me right to the very end. Jesus said in John chapter 10, I give them eternal life, and they shall never perish. No one shall snatch them out of my hand. No one. And what a hope for us as Christians that no one shall snatch them out of my hand. I'm going to sing.